John, right before the break, you made a statement that I think needs some explanation. You know, you said if we want to wait until after this is all over to discuss what went wrong, we'd have to be waiting an awful long time because, I mean, are you saying basically this war is a permanent war?
Well, that's my belief, yeah. I don't think that it's going to end anytime soon. And, again, the problem is not stabilizing Iraq. We have done what nobody has been able to do before, and that's convinced much of the Muslim world that that we're bad guys, and we are, in fact, the enemy. At the briefings we talk about later, they would like to, the administration would like to isolate this and what they call, you know, the fundamentalist Muslims. But if we guess that 1% of them are fundamentalist Muslims, that's 10 million. You know, that these are not small numbers, even at small percentages. And I do think that it is a problem that's going to be exacerbated. I want to mention, are there moderate Muslims in the world? Absolutely. Some of them are personal friends of mine. I just don't think they're going to be, successful in dominating the politics, not only in the Middle East, but we're seeing more and more problems in Europe. And some of them are going to be here.
We, it's like you mentioned earlier, the Pottery Barn theory. If you break it, you buy it. We've bought it, and we're there. And, you know, it's, no matter how much pressure there is on the president, you know, his approval rating's down in the 29th percentile area, there's no reasonable way we can just pull out of Iraq, is there?
No, that's the problem. We have created a tar baby. There's no doubt about that. I was recently at some military briefings, and they were telling us what we need to do, and I think they're politically unacceptable. The short-range forecast is that, you know, this is the military figures, 50 years.
50 years.
Yeah, those are the short-term forecasts. I don't think the American public understands or is up for a 50-year war, or understand the commitment of resources, time, and whatnot. You know, we started out, you know, we were promised that the Iraqi oil was going to pay for this. We're going to get the pumps up and running, and it would be short term. We'd spend a few billion dollars. I had run some numbers about a year ago in briefings, and we were spending $5 billion a month, and that was for Iraq and Afghanistan, and that number now is approaching $10 billion a month. The biggest strategic issue that we are now facing is not military. It's our national debt. And, you know, we keep printing money to do various subjects, and that is the critical issue on the horizon.
Hey, but we just had another $70 billion tax cut, or at least tax freeze. I guess the national debt doesn't count, and we can just wait for our children and grandchildren to pay that off.
No comment. Sorry, I think that if you want the strategic issue, it is that. And then you go out and look and say, who owns that debt?
China.
And, you know, yeah, exactly.
You know,
a big chunk of this is owned by foreign governments.
You talk to a lot of people about military issues, things like morale among the troops and reenlistment and things of that sort. Now, you know, American people are all behind our troops. We support what they're doing, although whether we agree with the president or not. Well, what do you hear on that front?
Well, actually, it's pretty good. I was down at Fort Hood recently, out on ranges with guys, all of whom had been to Iraq and back. And morale there is pretty high. They have a high degree of confidence. I think the issues are bigger, not so much in the reenlistment figures. One of the things that you're not hearing about are the number of captains and majors who are now voting with your feet. In other words, your middle management who are bowing out as quickly as possible. Accession ratio ought to be of concern to us because I think we're kind of cooking the books. We talk about the number of people being recruited meeting the numbers. Well, what we've done there in reality is we've raised the age level at which you can enlist. You can only do that so much. We have raised the number of what we call Cat 4s, in other words, people who are not, you know, the brightest bulbs in the lot there. And we've always had some minimal number there, but those numbers have been increased. And then we've lowered the number that we said we need. So, you know, there's some very serious problems on the horizon. I think the biggest one is what the toleration level will be of the American public. Military in general understands there's a conflict on. That does not translate in what I'm hearing, you know, in the American public in general.
Talk to me for a moment about casualties, because, you know, the numbers keep growing. We can't seem to solve this problem.
Well, there's several issues with casualties. One of them that we were discussing on the break is the age. Now, the age of casualties, when you compare this with other wars, you know, it used to be that there was young kids who were unfortunately getting killed off, particularly when we had a draft. Because of the number of reservists that have been brought in, coupled with the kind of war that we're at, it's not the troops on the front line fighting and shooting every day, it's that everybody is vulnerable. The people who used to be your rear echelon troops, your maintenance and logistics people and all that, are now vulnerable because IEDs, or the improvised explosive devices, are some of the biggest problems. By the way, one of the things that most folks don't realize is the other side is getting a lot of help there. They are evolving very fast, and it's clear that they have some technical help, because their tactics and technology evolves within a period of weeks.
What would you say to this question? Is that, you know, staying there is going to be bad. It'll be continuing like it is for who knows how long. How bad would it be in comparison if we just pulled out? Would it be worse?
Well, many of us had said before this started that, you know, the probability of civil war is pretty high. Again, a lot of this goes back to, I like to blame the Brits, but it certainly wasn't just them. But when the cartographers got in and chopped up this thing, they did not account for who lives where. And certainly there are three major groups inside the area, don't like each other much. The Shia that are in the south have a greater affinity for Iran. The people from constitutional Iraq are worried about Iran taking over. Then you've got the Kurdish problem. Now, the Kurdish problem is not just a problem in Iraq, but the Kurds are also found in Iran, in Turkey, and Syria, none of whom want to see, you know, a separate Kurdistan, except the Kurds themselves. So you've got some huge problems that are, none of them are easily solvable.
You say the insurgents are getting some help. Does that mean from a government? And if so, do you know what government that is?
Well, I mean, it certainly looks like it's coming from Iran, you know, the technical support and advice. Now, whether is it government-sponsored, hard to say. Are the people there? I'll put in a little plug. I just finished a monograph that has now been cleared for release. It's physically at the publisher. I'm going to make an offer. Costs nothing. If you'll send me an email, I will send you a copy of the monograph that addresses many of these things, and the address would be nonlethal2, NONLETHAL, number 2, at AOL.com.